For the last few weeks, we've been doing intellectual property. We've been discussing various halachic perspectives, an inherent right of a creator to the work he creates. Discussed Nana, discussed Shutfus, Torah, special svaras that apply to Torah. This week, this abbreviated week, we're going to focus on the elephant in the room, the question of halacha's attitude toward secular intellectual property legislation, copyright, patents. So tonight we'll just give a general background on Din Malchus Adnina in 10 minutes or so, limit to how much we can do in that time, and Thursday we'll follow up by discussing how the post can apply the principles to intellectual property specifically. So Din Malchus Adnina is a very broad topic. I've spoken about it in other contexts. If anyone's heard that, I apologize. We'll be going over roughly the same ground. I just want to introduce some of the main questions of Din Malchusa, which are central to our discussion of how the halakhic principle of Din Malchusa Dina applies to intellectual property. So the Gemara uses the rule Din Malchusa Dina in perhaps a half dozen places in Shas. The general contexts are either taxation, or what we would call eminent domain. Basically, the Gemara invokes Din Malchusa to justify the right of a government to seize property of its citizens. Such seizure is either in the form of a tax, their right to collect property taxes, personal taxes, different kinds of taxes, or the right to seize property for the public good. The Gemara talks about building bridges. The Gemara says, obviously, there must be a principle of Din Malchusa Dina, because if not, when the government seizes somebody's timber and builds a bridge, how are we allowed to use that bridge? And it's gzeila. If a bandit steals somebody's property and builds something out of it, you can't use that structure. It belongs to the owner. Rav Ezra Batzri, in his discussion of Din Malchus Adina, actually says, he poses a challenge to some posts can argue that in Eretz Yisrael there's no Din Malchus Adina based on a sheet in the Rishonim. Some contemporary posts, Bnei Brak types mostly, Haredim from Bnei Brak, Rav Karelitz's school, argue that there's no Din Malchus in Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Batzri asks them, okay, so if you're right, he says, then how are you allowed to use the roads? How are you allowed to use the bridges? If the property was all taken from private citizens, Shalom Kedin, the Gemara says you wouldn't be allowed to use it. If not for Din Malchus Adina, that's the question. I'll call upon the point we have to understand is that the Gemara's Din Malchus Adina is almost always applied in the context of seizure of property generally for the government's own good. In the case of the bridges, it's for the public good. And that brings us to the first and one of the most basic, most controversial questions of Din Malchus Adina. Does the rule apply only, is it a narrow rule that says the government for its own interest has the right to seize property? Or can the government, do we recognize the laws the government passes for the general good of society? In the case of the bridges, everyone agrees, since it's the government taking the property, it's doing it, it has the right to do that. But the question is, they just pass a law that regulates commerce, that regulates transactions between two private citizens where the government has no direct interest. The government's not taking any money. The government is just telling you, do this, don't do this. If this happens, plaintiff wins, defendant wins. The government passes rules, and the rules that are meant for the good of society, they're meant for the smooth functioning of business. Are these laws recognized, are these laws binding upon Jews under the principle of Din Malchus Adina? So this is a major machlokes Rishonim. Some Rishonim take a very minimalist view that Din Malchus is limited to taxation and similar things. Currency regulation is another area where the poskim pretty much unanimously agree that Din Malchus Adina applies. Regulating a currency is seen as a fundamental prerogative of government. The government needs that to function. But anything which is just regulating the affairs of private citizens, some poskim say there is no such rule of Din Malchus Adina. Two Jews are still supposed to follow Din Torah. And not, now, these posts can probably agree that for non-Jews, they may very well agree that the government does have the right to pass such laws and they will be binding upon ordinary non-Jewish citizens, but at least when it comes to two Jews, we have no such principle of Din Malchus Adina. We have to follow Din Torah. Chazon Ish is a noted adherent of this view. And you find some posts can even use a kind of reductio ad absurdum. They say, Nitko, we're learning Chazon Mishpat. Is this pointless? There's plenty of law out there. Should we just close the svarim and just learn the law? The law has an opinion on almost everything. So that can't be, they say. They take for granted that that's obviously preposterous. So they say, al karchach, we have to limit the principle of Din Malchus Adina in some way that it doesn't cover everything. And one of the main mahalchim is this approach that it doesn't cover affairs of two Jews. This is the Chazon Ish's position. It is surprisingly far from clear among the later poskim what the consensus actually is. The Ramad brings the view that Din Malchus Adina, the broad view that it applies, even where there's no direct governmental interest, it applies anything which is L'Toelas B'nai HaMedina, L'Tikrun HaMedina, anything which is for the public good is binding, and he seems to paskin like that, but he does bring other deists, and the later Achranim throughout the 18th, 19th, 20th centuries have debated whether or not we paskin like that expansive view. And there's no absolute consensus. My impression is that most poskim, or more poskim, the more dominant view is probably the expansive view. The Din Malchus Adina does apply. But again, Chazon Ish doesn't seem to hold like that, and certainly not everyone agrees. That's going to be one of the first and most fundamental questions about applying Din Malchus to intellectual property. The government is not claiming any direct interest. They're just trying to regulate the business of private citizens. That's the first question. Do we say Din Malchus Adina in such circumstances? Second and third issues.
Can I understand someone? Chazon Ish says it doesn't apply, you mean specifically to the interaction between Jewish people?
Yes.
It applies, it just doesn't apply to that.
He's not really discussing what happens between non-Jewish people. I think he would probably agree. I mean, he uses language repeatedly like, Ben Shnei Yisraelim, Ein Leleches Basar Chud Dineihem, La'olam Yesh Lanu the Torah, and we follow the Torah. He's talking about Jews, yeah. He has a lot to say. I have to read it more carefully. I don't think he's talking about non-Jews, but he's focusing on Jews. Second and third issues are somewhat closely related. They are a notion of fairness. Many posts can use the expression, Dina de Malchusa Dina, we say, Gazlan asun de Malchusa lo amrinan. There's such a thing as theft, even if perpetrated by the government, if it's not fair, if it's fundamentally in violation of people's rights. And B, another variation of that, law which directly, flagrantly contradicts the Torah. So focusing a little bit on the fairness, poskim don't give exact definitions for what's fair and what's not. Poskim approach the question of fairness from many different perspectives. One idea is consistency. A law that arbitrarily singles out people without being a universally consistently applied across the kingdom is considered unfair and becomes gazlanusa. There is a whole sheet in the Rishonim that says that the only laws that are valid are laws that are traditional and of long standing. New laws that the king just gets up and says are not valid. Ramban says that. The Chazon Ish says, what does that mean? Does that really mean that no law is valid unless it exists from time immemorial? I mean, all laws must have been innovated at some point. And he says he can't say that. He says what those Rishonim mean, they mean fairness. They mean what we would call sort of constitutional. That there's a general sense, whether it's a written constitution, whether it's an unwritten notion of fairness. Chazon Ish calls in Mashachok HaYisharim, consider fair and not ovel, Ayin Vav Lamed. So he says any law has to be held up to this standard and see, does it pass this test of fairness? If it does, then it's okay. It's considered consistent with the long-standing rights of citizens, rights of balance between the rights of citizens and rights of the government. If not, then not. So some contemporary posts can discuss things like, is communism valid? On the one hand, it's the government. The government passes laws that all property has to be nationalized, like in Venezuela or wherever. On the other hand, some poskim say it's fundamentally unfair. It's fundamentally an infringement against property rights. It's just a violation of people's due process or people's inherent right to property. It's not fair. Poskim debate such things. The notion of fairness, obviously, is very hard to define, but that's one thing not going to be so relevant to our discussion. In our discussion, it seems the poskim generally do take for granted that something like intellectual property is basically a fair law. But anyway, it's important to know that is a standard that has to be fair. It can't be something which is deemed robbery and unfair. The other point is also interesting. This idea that...
What I understand is, let's say they don't hold intellectual property in the secular world is binding. Mm-hmm. So what is the alternative? Violate the law and put to prison? I'm not sure.
Well, obviously, that's your decision. You certainly don't... You have to make a decision whether it's worth going to prison for. But first of all, the digital age, we have 20 opportunities a day to do things which technically violate the law, but you're very unlikely to get caught for. If you know, it's true, every now and then the RIAA sues somebody for downloading or for sharing music, but on the whole, there's an incredible amount of piracy that goes on, and most of us probably do things that violate the law. I certainly do. Occasionally, if I copy something from a safer, depending on how much it is, I may very well cross the line somewhere between doing something which is too much or... So the question is, yeah, I mean, hopefully most of what I do falls under fair use, but the question is, if I ever want to do something which goes beyond fair use, so I have the question that as a Jew, are we obligated to respect the law, or if it's between two Jews? I'm not going to go to jail if you don't sue me. So the question is, if I tell you up front, Dr. Mand, I'm going to copy your book, and tough luck on you, because I don't care if the law allows it, we're Jews, and I expect you to follow the halacha. So you can argue that based on what we learned for the last 5 weeks, even according to halacha, it's aser. But we're discussing the point, let's say, putting aside the question of what halacha itself says. Let's say you go like the poskim that you don't feel is a significantly strong, a sufficiently strong case to be made al pi halacha. Can you invoke the law to stop me from copying? So the answer is, it depends. It depends whether these laws are considered binding between Jews under the rules of Din Malchus HaDinah. So the last criterion, which I want to discuss tonight, is the question of against Din Torah. This is also very hard to define. Some poskim, the Shach, Chazon Ish again, are very strong proponents of this, that no law can stand when it directly conflicts with Din Torah. Chazon Ish, on the other hand, goes even further. The Chazon Ish says, which you with what he said before, he says, the Shach is the one who formulates this language that there's no Din Malchusa when it's against Din Torah. Chazon Ish says, what does that mean? Every law is against Din Torah. The Torah always has an opinion. If there's no reason to Mechayev, then it's Potter. If there's no reason something is Asur, then it's Mutter. So everything is either Asur or Mutter, Chayev or Potter. So what does it mean to divide laws into two categories? Some laws are against Din Torah, some laws are not against Din Torah. Everything is against Din Torah. The Torah always has an opinion, and if the law is not consistent with the Torah, then it's against Din Torah. So the Chazon Ish basically says, again, no law is binding on two Jews unless the government has a direct interest. Many other poskim, though, do say that there is a meaningful distinction between laws that are against Din Torah and laws that are not, as we'll see in the Chasam Sofer this week and other poskim. The poskim basically have a notion kind of the spirit of the law, that even though the law technically says something which goes beyond what the halacha says, we have to ask ourselves, is this the sort of thing that Chazal did? Would Chazal have done this to face with the situation? Is this extending or building on something Chazal did? Or is this something which flatly contradicts what Chazal did? One interesting perspective on this is a classic tshuva of the Imre Yosher, Meir Arik, on rent control legislation. So when the government step in to stabilize rents, they do two things. There's an anti-eviction component to the statute, that you can't evict people as long as they're paying rent. And B, there are rent stabilization rules, that the governments legislate what the rents have to be, how much you can increase per year, or any other system they have for fixing rents at points that are different from natural market rates. So this has been extensively discussed in 20th and 21st century poskim. Are such statutes binding, again, between two Jews? Again, if your landlord is not a Jew, or if he's not an observant Jew, and he takes you to court, what are you going to do? You're not going to, you can't fight the government. But if there are two Jews, and they both want to do the right thing, and they're both willing to follow Din Torah, and Reuven says, I'm the landlord, it's my property, I'm doubling your rent next year. Shimon says, you know, I'll do that, it's against the law. Reuven says, what do you mean law? We follow the Torah. So they go to Beis Din. What's Beis Din supposed to do? Is Beis Din supposed to say, al pi halacha you're allowed to, al pi halacha you generally are allowed to? Halacha has certain basic protections, but they're not very broad. The law in certain jurisdictions gives the tenant much, much more protection. So are such laws bindings? This was heavily debated throughout the 20th century. Rameir Arik splits the difference. Rameir Arik says the anti-eviction component is binding. The price-fixing part is not binding. Why? Because he says halacha does have certain protections for tenants. You're not allowed to evict a tenant under certain circumstances if you won't have a place to go within certain, you have to give them a certain amount of notice. Again, those protections are fairly narrow, but there are certain cases in which you're not supposed to evict a tenant. But even during those periods, what Chazal called as man hoda, the poskim call as man hoda, the notice you have to give him, you're allowed to raise the rent to market rates. You can't raise it arbitrarily, because Chazal recognized, just as American law does, that the power to tax is the power to destroy. If you can raise the rent arbitrarily, that's equivalent to giving him the right to evict. But you are allowed to raise the rent to market rates during that period. Under a contract, while you're still in contract, you can't alter any terms of the contract. Whatever you agreed to, you agreed to. Once the contract is over, or if there is no contract, and the tenant is only remaining there due to Chazal's protection for the tenant, on the one hand, you can't evict him. On the other hand, you can raise the rent to market rates. So says Rameir Arik.
Would that include, let's say the contract was still, he was still in the middle of a lease, but he hadn't been paying rent for a few months. Did he void the contract?
So that's a good question. There is a position in the poskim, I think it's probably the dominant position, that failure to pay rent does void the contract, and you could even evict in such a case. Generally, I think you could even evict, and certainly in the terms of the contract would no longer be binding. If he is coming back and ready to make up the difference, then maybe
could
not.
Could you raise the rates to market rate then?
I think so, yeah. I think in that case, you could even evict him totally if he's not paying the rent. So right. I think in such a case, I think you'd have the right to, I don't think you would get any special protection in that case. Mm-hmm. But so Mayor Arik says, so again, we use this litmus test that Din Malchus is going to be binding when it's not contradicting Din Torah. So he says anti-eviction is in the spirit of Chazal. It's not exactly what Chazal did, because the modern law certainly gives the tenant much more than Chazal gave him. But that's how he understands consistent with Chazal, consistent with the Torah, because it builds on the same foundation. It goes in the same direction. It's in the spirit of it, and it's therefore we say Din Malchus is valid. However, he says when it comes to the rules that prevent the rents from being raised to market rates, which force him to give his property to the tenant at arbitrarily low rates, he says that's not binding, because that's against Din Torah. Because Chazal explicitly rejected that. Chazal said that's not fair, and you can't do that. It's not that's an unfair deprivation of the landlord's rights. So that, he says, is an example of something which is against Din Torah. Other poskim have other standards, slightly different standards and some poskim, that's some of the most interesting parts of the sugya, some poskim wildly differ as to certain types of laws, rent control, bankruptcy legislation. We find also different perspectives in the poskim. Some of them say things like, well, if it's a minhag or it's a law, so then we follow it. Other poskim say, what do you mean? It's gzeila. He said, you're letting a debtor, he borrowed money, he has the creditor's money, you're letting him walk away with it. That's gzeila, he says. You can't have a law, you can't have a minhag in such a case. He says, minhag, we find similar considerations. Some poskim say that we can't have a minhag, which is a minhag geruah, which is against Din Torah. So poskim sometimes disagree on certain laws as to whether they're fair or not fair, whether against Din Torah or not. These are some of the fundamental questions that will determine whether we apply the rule of Din Malchus Adina to intellectual property legislation.